WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscowane. Yelena Hanga is a living example of multiculturalism. She's Black and Russian and Jewish. Her grandfather was the son of a slave. Her grandmother was the daughter of a Polish rabbi. Her mother was born in Russia, and her father, who left the family shortly after Yelena was born, was from Africa. Yelena herself grew up in Moscow with her grandmother and her mother. After graduating from college, she worked as a reporter with the Moscow News during the Gorbachev years. She first came to the States on an exchange program and worked at the Christian Science Monitor. Because of her unusual family history, she got a lot of press attention during her visit, including some profiles on TV. With the help of a Rockefeller Foundation fellowship, she traced down members of her family from Mississippi to Tanzania. Her book, Soul to Soul, describes her efforts to figure out where she came from and to celebrate the importance of family.
Every Russian is so proud of his ancestors. You go to his house and you see the pictures. That was my grandmother, that was my grandfather, great-grandparents, and these were in 1917 fighting on this side of the revolution. These were on this side. And when they would ask me, my grandmother, that's it. And I felt that I was from the middle of nowhere, a Black person in the middle of the white country, no history, and I didn't really feel good about it. But then I found out about Alex Haley and his book Roots, and I decided to answer one question. Who am I? A Russian person with a Russian soul who just happened to be Black, or a Black person who just happened to be born in Russia, or am I Jewish? And, you know, I have so many, and while I was looking through my roots, I found out that my great-grandfather on the Mississippian side, he was a slave in Mississippi, he was a minister in the Methodist Church. My other great-grandfather was a rabbi from Poland who had immigrated to New York. Now, my grandfather on the father's side was from Tanzania. He was imam, the head of the Muslim church. So having all these different backgrounds, and I myself was born and raised in communist atheist Russia, so that question was getting more and more complicated.
Well, it's complicated even to listen to
those questions. And I had to travel from Moscow to London, from London to Tanzania, from there to Mississippi and Chicago, and I guess I completed the book. I answered the question, who am I? I'm the citizen of the world.
Well, let's just get some piece of the history of your family, and I really want to start with your grandfather, who went to Tuskegee.
Yes, he graduated from Tuskegee.
He studied with Booker T. Washington.
Yes,
Washington.
George Washington Carver was his teacher.
What was his attraction to the Communist Party? And this was, I guess, back in the 20s.
Yeah, that's correct. Well, my family lost the property in Mississippi because of racism. And my grandfather was, you know, hating racism. And the first white man that shook his hand happened to be the member of the Socialist Party. And he said that there was no racism in the socialist society. That's how my grandfather got involved in the socialist movement.
So he saw it as a place where true equality could
exist. That's correct. Where Blacks and whites could work on building the society of equality.
Now, your grandmother came to this country. I'm getting confused even trying to tell your story. Your grandmother came to this country from Poland.
That's correct. My great-grandfather was a rabbi in Poland, and he immigrated here in the beginning of the century with his family. And my grandmother was a, you know, typical Jewish, you know, utopist who was going to dedicate her life to make this world better. And one day she was participating in the union demonstration, and she ended up in jail, and she found this handsome Black male in the same jail, and they fell in love with each other. And in the morning, her father, a rabbi, came to bail her out. And she said, Daddy, could you please bail me out together with my new friend, Oliver Golden? And Daddy looked at the new friend and he says, well, you're staying in jail with your new friend, and left them there. And that was the beginning of a beautiful love story.
But under difficult circumstances, because
she was rejected from her family the minute she announced that she was in love with a Black male. And she'd never seen her parents since this moment that she was like 25 years old. She was just... She was
just ostracized from
her
the family.
And only 2 years ago, when I came to look for my roots, I found the family.
Again, we will get to that story.
Okay.
But let's talk a little bit about what then it was like for your grandparents, your Black grandfather, your white grandmother, to try to live together. This was in New York City.
Yes.
How were they able to do that?
Well, they moved to Harlem, and because of racism, they had to pay twice for the rent, for example, than if they were just black and black couple or black and white couple. My grandmother lost all her friends, her girlfriends, and she, because they were even afraid to associate with, you know, black people, and they wouldn't go to Harlem to visit her, and she had all these nervous breakdowns, and she would go to the doctors and ask what to do, and he says, well, hey, follow your heart. If you're really in love with this person, just forget about your other life and dedicate your life to this man. And they decided they didn't want to stay in the country where they had problems. And in these years, Soviet Union was an illusion of the place where nobody was judged by the color of their skin. And by the way, there were thousands of white Americans working in the Soviet Union. Ford was making his cars in the Soviet Union. This is an unknown page in American history. And there were thousands and thousands of them making very good dollars in the Soviet Union.
You said they went to Russia looking for a place where there was economic and social justice. What did they find? And they moved to Uzbekistan.
Well, first of all, they went to Uzbekistan, not to Russia. This is the southern republic on the border of Afghanistan. And the reason why they chose Uzbekistan is the people are very, very dark-skinned there. Most of Americans think that Soviet Union was a white country, which is wrong. It's because you've seen only Slavics coming from Russia. But Uzbek people sometimes are darker than African Americans, and my grandparents thought there would be a kinship between African Americans and Uzbek people.
Did they find it?
Well, yes, they did. And we could talk about racism in the Soviet Union now, later. But in these years, there were not that many black people, don't forget. And there was a novelty. Plus, there's such a thing like, maybe, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So since white America was an enemy of black America, that made black Americans the friends of the Soviet Union, who were trying to make white America feeling bad about themselves. So plus, my grandparents were educated, and Russia really wanted, you know, quality education. My grandmother was teaching English in university. My grandfather was teaching how to grow up cotton, and Uzbekistan was the land of cotton growing. And they were happy. They had dollars. They could travel all over the country. They could come back to America anytime they wanted, free education, free health care. Now, what else do they want?
Did they come back to America?
No, they never did. But I'll explain to you why. Stalin was very xenophobic, and he was afraid of spies, and he announced that all the foreigners should either change their citizenship and stay in the Soviet Union, or they should go back to America. Half of the group returned back. My grandparents decided to stay because my mother was born and she was black, and my grandmother, being a white woman, was afraid to return back to a racist country with a black kid. That's the only reason why she stayed there.
Well, what was the effect of Stalin's rule on Uzbekistan and on your family? There were certainly the purges, and more were learning what life was like under...
The minute they changed their citizenship, they became Soviet, and they were treated as all the Soviets, meaning terribly. And there are stories in my book, like, for example, one day my grandparents came back and the neighbors said that secret police came to arrest them at night. And my grandfather, being this idealist, went back to secret police and he said, how could you do that? I came to help to build the new society of equality and you wanted to arrest me. And they said, oh, Dr. Golden, don't worry. Go back and work, because we had already fulfilled the plan for arrests for this month.
So did they always live under some cloud of suspicion? Even though they renounced their American citizenship, they still were American.
Well, let me give you another example. My mother was already around 50 years old, living in Moscow, when she went to the restaurant called Uzbekistan. For her, that was like a soul food place, and she loves taking American friends there. And all of a sudden, an older male approached her and started hugging her, kissing her, and he says, Lila, I'm so happy to see you again. How are you? And she says, well, I'm not sure we know each other. He said, oh, come on. When you were 2 years old, you remember you fell down. They took you to the hospital. And when you were 10 years old, you came home with bad grades. That's what your mother told you. And she says, how do you know all this private things? And he says, well, I was undercover KGB agent keeping eye on your family since you were born. So no matter how long you live there, and I experienced it on my own, I could be a wonderful school, you know, student. I was playing tennis. I was paying all the, you know, taxes. The fact that my grandparents were Americans, if you know, you know, just turned everybody off, because if you know what McCarthy era was, You went through that in 50s. We were going through that till Gorbachev came to power. And it doesn't matter what color you are. Now, color didn't help me because if I was a white American in the second or third generation, I would be already white Russian. Since I was black, the minute I apply for a job, they check my background. Why is she black? Okay, her grandparents came to America.
My guest is journalist Yelena Khanga. Her book, Soul to Soul, is the history of her culturally and racially diverse family. More after a short break. This is Fresh Air. Journalist Yelena Khanga is my guest. Now, you were born in 1962.
Well, you don't have to announce that. Okay, I was born not that long ago in Moscow.
All right, I didn't know how sensitive you were about that. But you grew up with your mother,
yes,
and your grandmother. So it's three generations of women in one household. How typical was that in Russia?
Very typical. First of all, the rate of divorce in my country is much higher than in your country. That's why it's a very typical thing. Yes. Now, the thing is that we don't have the same problem that you do with single teenagers' mothers. Okay? That's not the problem that you have when babies make babies. It's the problem that the rate of divorce is very high, and most likely the baby will stay with the mother and grandmother will bring her up. So I was a typical, you know, kid, and I called my grandmother and mother parents. In my mind, that was natural. When I was at school, I would say I should ask permission of my parents, meaning mother and grandmother.
You write that you never felt like a stranger in my black skin. And yet it seemed that people certainly looked at you. I mean, you were different because you were a different color in Russia. But what was the difference?
Let me put it this way. In my country, Russian people, Soviet people were very uncomfortable with outsiders. But the minute I opened my mouth, they heard my accent, meaning a Moscow accent. They could even say from what neighborhood I was. So the color didn't play that much of a role. So it's not like in America where the color defines, you know, people treat you based on the color. Yes, we have bigots and racists in my country, but more important is that you are Soviet and you're controlled by the same system, that you came out from the same system. You just happen to be a different color.
And yet it seems the way you write that anti-Semitism was real back then.
Yeah.
Real in a way, perhaps,
yes.
that the racism in this country is.
Well, I guess that Jews in my country are the blacks of the Soviet Union. And I see so many similarities between black people in America and Jewish people in my country. That's why I can relate to lots of problems of Jewish people in my country. Yeah, we have. See, the other thing is, in America, racism was institutionalized. In my country, anti-Semitism is institutionalized.
How does it express itself? And even as a child, how did it express yourself? And you even brought home stories that...
Well, very simple. For example, I found out from my girlfriend who was Jewish that she had to study twice better in order to get to Moscow State University. And same thing happens with black kids. They have to study five times more to achieve what a white person achieves here. Or if you're a light-skinned person, or if you can pretend that you're white, you'll make a better career. Same thing in my country, where Jews were basically forced to change their last names and write down that they're Russian, because they realized as Russians they would achieve much more than as Jewish people. So people would try to hide their Jewish identity.
Now, your grandmother was Jewish. How much did she hide her identity?
Well, I found out that I was Jewish on a very strange circumstance. I came home one day, I was 70 years old, and I was talking about whatever I heard in the street, and I called Jews a very bad name. And I didn't really mean it. I just repeat whatever everybody was saying in the street. And my grandmother just smashed me in the face. I fell down. I was so shocked. That was the first time when she hit me. And I said, well, am I missing something? She says, yes, don't you ever call Jews a bad name. And I said, why? Everybody does. And she says, well, because you're Jewish. I said, no, I'm not Jewish. I'm Russian. She says, you'll be surprised. I'm Jewish. That makes your mother Jewish. That makes you Jewish. And I said, does that make our cat Jewish also? Because she never explained to me, for simple reason. She lost her job as a Jewish person only because she was Jewish. And she felt that she couldn't protect me from being black, but at least she could protect me from volunteering the information in the street that I'm Jewish.
So you really, for your own protection, then had to hide your Jewish identity.
Well, after that, I was not hiding it. Mm-hmm. It just, my grandmother never practiced Judaism because she was a communist. And that was never an issue. But I became very conscious of being Jewish after this thing.
Let me talk a little about when you came to this country, and in part, what you did was to find various members of your family, which you did. And I wonder if you could describe for us the family reunion.
Yeah, we had a fantastic family reunion in Chicago last September. We had 100 relatives, both black and white, coming from all over America. Now, for food, we had kosher chitlins.
Now, you're not just pulling our leg on that, right?
Well, I have the recipe. Just call me. I'll give you the details. But we also had a rabbi that came to sing me the lullaby that my grandmother used to sing to me. The words were, yummy, yummy, dzin mirali de la vusta sme de la ville, excuse my Mississippi accent. And we had a black minister from Baptist Church, and we had a Gladsmer band, and we had a Mississippi band who came to play real Mississippi blues. But the best part was at midnight when blacks were dancing Jewish dances and Jews were doing electric slide.
Oh, that's great.
And that was the best thing I could ever imagine, because at first there was tension because, you know, blacks, Jews seeing each other first time in their life, and they were like, excuse me, I beg your pardon, are you related to me? But at the end, everybody was hugging and kissing each other and exchanging cards and saying, you have to come to my family reunion, you have to come and call me. So it just, I realized that the black-Jewish conflict can be solved just if you talk and respect each other's opinion. And don't take things personally.
And have food and music, obviously.
Right.
Helps as well.
Right.
This is
right.
A big country, though. How did you go about tracing down your family?
It was hard. You know, some people saw me on TV. Some people read about me. Some people, for example, the branch in Los Angeles didn't want to relate to me. I called them, and my grandmother's sister-in-law hung up on me. She says, I don't believe in mixed marriages. Stay where you are, and we're not going to, you know, mix. You know, Jews should marry Jewish people. But the second and the third generation called me, and I said, Yelena, come on. I mean, she's 80 years old. What do you expect? Let's get together. And they brought me. And now she gets offended when I go and call her on holidays. She's like, what's wrong with you? Are you the family or what?
Yelena Hanga's book is called Soul to Soul.